Infender Radio is on now.
Podcast on the English-speaking internet. I'm your host for this evening, Harrison Melfeld, and joining me tonight is Holly Felmuth.
Hey, everyone.
We are without Colin and Lewis tonight. Colin could not be here for a work conflict, but Lewis is not here tonight because, Lewis just recently got hitched, surprisingly, at the weekend. I knew he was engaged, but it kind of just came out of surprising for both of us.
Yeah, it did.
Yes, and I can only hope that for his wedding cake it was Nintendo related, but I'm not sure. I haven't been able to check his wedding photos.
Whatever the case, we're really happy for you, Lewis.
That we are, and hopefully with this marriage we will be able to still have you again next week. For this week, we have our usual three-part structure of what we've been playing, Nintendo news, and our feature for this week will be the 20th anniversary of Super Metroid's release, and we will be dabbling a little bit more and talking about its legacy, its influences on the speedrunning community, and whether or not we may see another 2D Metroid later this year. But to get things started, Holly, what have you been playing as of late?
Well, I finally picked up a very fantastic game called The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker HD for my Wii U.
I was about to say, fantastic. I recently got that, back at the holidays, and was able to finish that as well. Is there anything as far as that you're liking so far, be it, you know, the changes and just obviously the HD upgrade? I mean, we've talked so much about this game, even with the release of Link Between Worlds last November.
I didn't finish The Wind Waker originally. I mean, I've had a copy of it for at least a few years now. I played like two or three dungeons in before I kind of lost interest. Well, that's kind of harsh. I just had a lot of other games to move on to, and at the time I was running my own little blog, and I felt like I just was obligated to move on and play as many different games as possible, and so I finished very few games around that time period, so it kind of just fell into a rotten time period for me. But I have just really been struck by the visuals of this game. The HD graphics are really beautiful. I'm just kind of trying to play it, you know, with a fresh outlook, trying not to think about all the different things that people have said about the game through all the years, like it's one of the best Zelda games there are, and some of the, I don't know, sailing, and there's like a Triforce quest or something that's really irritating.
Yeah, that one is a little bit, it's more streamlined in this version, as opposed to, because in the original, you had to get through Triforce maps translated through Tingle, which was, I think, eight shards of the Triforce of Courage you had to get. But in this one, five of which you can find without translating, and three you have to get maps translated. So it's a little bit smoother.
That's cool. So you had to get a map from a certain location and then travel to Tingle's Island or whatever his location, and then just do that again and again and again until you had all eight?
Yes, you had to do that, get them translated, which would show the location, and you would kind of go through a mini dungeon or something, like a mini dungeon just to get these shards. But most of these maps were usually found underwater. You had to, you know, salvage them in the Great Sea. And I think the reasoning was probably behind that, though, which I'd mentioned previously, or in the past, was that the reason this was kind of implemented was mainly because of time. So that was one thing I was kind of hoping for in the HD remake, that we would actually see those lost dungeons put into the game, but lo and behold, we did not get that. But do you think that since you never did play the GameCube version, this alters your opinion of this on the HD, or would you feel like if you would have played it on the GameCube and this one, it would have not changed your opinion?
It probably varies. It probably changes my opinion a bit. I did play the original a little, and I can see, even though it's been at least a couple years since I played the original, I can still see kind of how the HD changes the graphics and just makes the game even more stunning than it originally was. But yeah, there are a lot of things, that Triforce quest being one of them, that, you know, I'll get to that part in the HD remix and I probably won't think, you know, like, oh, this is so convenient, because I never experienced the original. So it probably changes things.
Hmm. Were you one of those people that played Twilight Princess on the GameCube as opposed to the Wii?
I only ever played it on my Wii.
I know this is kind of going off topic, but the original game is that, I think it was like after, once Skyward Sword came out, and I went back to Twilight, well, no, I played Twilight Princess in lead up to Skyward Sword. And once I played through Skyward Sword, I had realized, you know, I never wanted to go back to just the simple waggle that I, that was just kind of phoned in at the last minute for that one. Not to say it made it a bad game, it was still one of my favorite Zelda titles of all time, Twilight Princess was. But I've had people just trying to, you know, uncover the, like, old copies of, like, Twilight Princess just on the GameCube, just to have less of the waggle on there or the motion controls. But, but yeah, Wind Waker HD, I mean, do you, as far as GameCube remakes like that, I mean, is there anything that you would personally like to see as far as remade in HD?
You mean other GameCube games?
Yes. Because this feels like it could be a trend. Who knows?
You know, I was thinking, maybe a couple days ago, maybe just earlier today, that an HD remix, and or remake, sorry.
It's a remake.
Of, yeah. An HD remake of Super Smash Bros. Melee. It's kind of a weird one, especially since we have a new Super Smash Bros. On the horizon. But I think Melee was a really, really fantastic game. Also, Beautiful Joe. That would be a really cool game in HD.
That would be. I mean, you would have to get probably something with Capcom, whether or not they would like to. Well, I mean, we've seen HD remakes of past Capcom titles, such as, like, you know, Resident Evil 4 put onto Xbox Live and PSN. But this one, in this case, I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question, but I'd put that more far in the least likely to happen, unless it's just there's a demand for it.
Yeah, it would be cool, though.
Although I would plop down a lot of money for an HD remake of Metroid Prime, complete with, you know, Wii Motion Plus controls.
Ooh, that would be good.
I mean, we have plenty of Metroid to talk about in the show, but yeah. But is that all you've been playing as of late?
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing a few other games, but I've already talked about them in past shows. You know, Monster Hunter, I'm still playing that one. It's super addicting, and also Bravely Default, which I haven't finished yet. So, you know, just the usuals.
I've neglected my 3DS, it seems like, the last couple months, and this is coming from someone who has not picked up A Link Between Worlds, and that's still onto my to-do list right now, because I still have a heap of games to get through, that and books as well, so it's two competing forms of media that I'm just still trying to balance time out to. In won't be trying to balance time out, I'm trying to balance time by finishing up Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which I am on the cusp of finishing at this moment. I believe I'm at the last world right now, which is World 6. I'm seeing why people find this to be a bit challenging as far on there. I mean, have you picked it up at all yet?
No, I didn't like Returns for the Wii very much, and so I haven't gotten Tropical Freeze.
But, I mean, one thing that, again, I just to reiterate is that I just love David Wise's composition on this one. And even I said on the Miiverse that I would give anything for a Club Nintendo reward where it had just the soundtrack available on there as, like, a year-end gift, or even as an item on there to use, buy coins with. I mean, like I said, it's difficult, but, you know, thankfully for a game like that, that doesn't really punish you so much as far as for dying. I mean, you're given quite amount of lives just to kind of complete there, but there was a period in time for a certain few levels where I went down from, like, 50 balloons, as in lives, for those who don't know, in the Donkey Kong Country world, down to round 25. So in a span of 2 hours, I lost that many, just in a bit of frustration of how much my stock I went away. Also, I feel like I'm getting a little burnt out on platformers. I mean, that sounds like sacrilege for me, but it just, I think after this one, I think I may have to take a short break from them. Well, that until Shovel Knight comes out.
That actually doesn't sound, you know, all that ludicrous to me, because I feel the same way when it comes to platformers. I'm just like, I mean, Yoshi's New Island just came out last week, and I thought about getting it, but then I thought, it's just another platformer. I don't see why I need this game. And so I'm actually kind of the same way when it comes to Nintendo and platformers right now.
Well, I think it's just the fact that the reason I enjoyed platformers so much was been be it the resurgence of it, whatever, especially the Galaxy series and of course, Rayman Origins and Legends. But this one, I mean, I'm not getting burnt out in the same way I got burnt out with shooters back in the, like about a few years back. This one, I think, at this point right now, because it's just the last few games I played on my Wii U have been platformers, and I think I need to take a break from this, so I don't have any resentments towards the genre, which I still love, will still love to the day I die. Tropical Freeze still finishing up there. I should have that finished probably by this week, and just to say my words on it. Yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing right now. As we've got through this, I think we should move on to the Nintendo news. First item on our Nintendo news is longtime Zelda producer Eiji Aonuma recently had an interview with a European publication Official Nintendo Magazine about the making of The Legend of Zelda: Link Between Worlds. And one little quote that came up from him that was fairly interesting that could give us an idea of what the next console-based Zelda would be. When the quote, one of the quotes in ONM was that he felt that recent Zelda games have been rather linear. Now, one thing that Link Between the Worlds, which of course I haven't picked up, but from reading through reviews, is it's stray away from the usual Zelda formula, as in you can finish item dungeons in a certain order, and you can rent items. And I know I'm probably missing other things that have changed up in that as well, but this is what I've asked the entire Infendo, audience was, how exactly would you like to see the Zelda franchise change, in what way? And do you think Anuma will probably go a little bit further, probably to make this series, especially 3D Zeldas, a lot fresh, because it seems like right after Wind Waker, we've seen, aside from changes be it controls and a visual style, we haven't really seen a drastic change in 3D Zeldas.
Well, I just wonder, I mean, so I guess he is talking about A Link Between Worlds. It's really strange that he should say that, recent Zelda games, including A Link Between Worlds, have become rather linear. Because as far as linearity goes, A Link Between Worlds has probably done the most to change up the Zelda formula in years, possibly ever, because, every Zelda since the original. Well, the original actually had some variations, like he didn't have to do the dungeons in any particular order, so I guess the series actually kind of started out that way. But, a change like this hasn't been made for a very, very long time. And so I just wonder what he's got in mind to shake up the Zelda formula even more in the future, particularly for the Wii U title. I honestly don't have any ideas, though, or even wishes, because I've just always loved Zelda. I have never played a Zelda game and thought, oh, this is getting stale.
Well, I mean, part of that goes in the back of my head thinking that, because I think that's, you always get a few reviewers out there that just kind of can't stand the formula for it right now. I mean, they feel like it's just a series that just kind of coattails, I mean, well, it's a series that just sells just based on name alone, which you can't blame. I mean, Zelda is Nintendo's number two property as far as when it comes to sales. Well, actually, you could say Pokemon is probably up there as far as one or two, but I digress. It's just, there are things that, as far as a laundry list of things I would want on there, and many are very important, such as voice acting, which I do hope that is implemented on there, even though if they do keep, which I would be the smart decision to keep Link a silent protagonist. I mean, there's been plenty of silent protagonists in video game history. I mean, Dirk the Daring, probably from Dragon's Lair, for instance, was a silent protagonist, and that helped out. But it's, when in terms of linearity, though, it's just, we could see the dungeon order probably, mix into this 3D Zelda. But as far as something like, say, an open world Zelda, which, Anuma has been quoted saying that he did like the open world aspects of Skyrim, even though he never really mentioned that it would be implemented in future Zelda titles. And it comes down to just, it shouldn't rely, the series should not rely, the next one should, well, the next version of the series should not rely on just a gimmick. I mean, one thing that we had going for Skyward Sword, though, was the fact that it was just going to implement this great control scheme that we've been, well, a lot of Wii titles at the time never really kind of busted into, like, you know, trying to fit in a good control scheme just to make the series seem fresh, and that's what I felt like it did for a little bit, even though the more I look back at the game, it's just, it's a great Zelda title, but as far as, you know, my top favorites, it's up there, but it's just, I mean, it never did, you know, dethrone my favorite Zelda title, which was Majora's Mask. If they were able to do something that had the same vein of what Majora's Mask did to change up from its predecessor, you know, that would be a good step forward. But, you know, we don't know. The only thing we probably will be seeing of another tease of another Zelda title, maybe at E3. I mean, I'd be shocked if it was playable, though, if they showed something up there.
Yeah, I agree on that.
But, I mean, we shall see. Now, moving on, we have a new competitor into the used game market, Walmart. Walmart announced just this past week, as recording today, yesterday, that they will be entering the used game market. And I believe you wrote the post up for this one right now.
Yes, I did.
I haven't been able to read much into it, although I know that this, which is going to be dubbed Walmart's Game Center, and they will be doing a video game trade-in starting around, I believe, March 26th. And, of course, taking in your old games for store credit up to $35. Now, do you see this as far... I mean, this is obviously a direct, you know, competition to GameStop and their used game market, and we've seen even developers, like, you know, and publishers kind of going against the used game market, as we've seen with Microsoft trying to implement DRM the Xbox One, which, of course, they backpedaled on that one as, like, later last summer. Do you see any success in this with Walmart?
I actually do. I think Walmart is just, you know, hugely popular. And it's convenient, you know, everyone goes to Walmart. And so I do see it being, you know, very popular. And I do see it as being a major threat to GameStop's business, actually. GameStop, I've read a couple of articles on this, and, you know, GameStop people, officials, that's the word, GameStop officials, they're pretty confident. They think that they, you know, they just know the used games business, and, you know, they've been in it for a decade or more at this point, and so they're pretty confident. But I think that they should be a little bit worried, honestly.
Well, yes, because, you know, given Walmart is the largest retailer in the entire world right now, I mean, it just... you can't go around at, like, a local town without seeing one of these things. And, you know, whether part of that, whatever, I mean, one other thing is that they're known for great things for low-income families. I mean, that or, you know, well, yeah. It's, for something like this to kind of come into, it's just, it's my opinion on the used game market is kind of half and half. One thing, I enjoy it. One thing, I do not like it. As far as I do like it, though, is the fact that I'm getting these games on cheap, whereas if I'm paying them a full price, obvious. I mean, that's the obvious point that I'm saying. Whereas I hate it, though, it comes down to as far as care, though, when it comes to the publisher and how much of that money does go back to the publishers. And I can understand why those major game publishers such as, like, EA and Ubisoft and even Activision are kind of combating it, trying to combat it. But as far as Walmart trying to do this, though, it's just, it's not all surprising, but... It's a matter of, like, will this reach that level of what GameStop or even other retailers are trying to do for, like, the used game market?
I think publishers should be a little concerned, just a little concerned, about Walmart going into the used games business. Because you go to Walmart, you trade in your game, and you get Walmart credit that you can buy on anything. I mean, in all likelihood, most people are probably going, selling their old games in, to have money to buy new games, right? And that's not too bad for video game publishers. But there are probably those who are going to go in, get their, you know, Walmart gift card for their games, and, you know, buy something completely different in a completely different department or whatever. So, I don't know, there might be a little bit of reason for publishers to be concerned there.
Again, this won't be starting probably for another week or so, and it'll be interesting to see how this tests out probably for the next few months and see if this gets us any legs running.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens there.
So moving on, though, for our last item on the news, which I believe Holly knows a little bit more, and it's on the issue of the Twitch Plays Pokemon. I have seen bits and pieces of this, though, but I believe you've been kind of catching up a little bit more on it, Holly. So if you wouldn't mind just telling us about it.
I haven't actually participated in it at all, in fact. I just barely actually signed up for Twitch today. When you're talking about Twitch Plays Pokemon, I think it's important for everyone to know what Twitch is, because I didn't know what Twitch was. It's a video streaming site for gamers, basically. So, you know, speedrunners will go there and you can watch live speedruns there among, you know, many, many other things. But as far as Twitch Plays Pokemon, I actually looked up a definition online, and it's funny because it has its own Wikipedia page. So this actually comes from Wikipedia. Twitch Plays Pokemon is a social experiment, so it's been dubbed kind of as a social experiment, and a channel on the video streaming website Twitch, consisting of a crowdsourced attempt to play Game Freak and Nintendo's Pokemon video games by parsing commands sent by users through the channel's chat room. So basically you go and there's, you know, like a live stream of Pokemon 24/7 until they, you know, beat the particular game that they're working on. And you just have to sign up for Twitch and go to the chat, which is off to the side, and input commands like up or down or left or right or start, B, things like that. And
so all of these people on there are, who are streaming this, they're in control of what the actions are going through in the game.
Yes, which leads to some seriously strange and chaotic gameplay. But that's kind of where anarchy versus democracy comes in. There's these two modes that it has. And according to the actual channel on Twitch, anarchy mode is the classic mode where everyone's inputs are applied immediately. Whereas democracy mode chooses the most popular input provided during a 30-second voting period. So I think they implemented democracy somewhere in the middle of playing Pokemon Red, because, you know, when everyone's inputs are going in at the exact same time, it can seriously lead to some very strange things, I guess. And it was probably really tedious and really crazy. So they implemented democracy mode so that, you know, during a 30-second voting period, people who actually know what's up and how to play the game can input what they want, like as many times as they possibly can, so that it's a little more likely that actions will happen that will actually aid the gameplay. What's interesting is that democracy mode is automatically selected at the start of every hour during the gameplay and can be deselected by successfully voting for anarchy mode using democracy mode's input voting system. That, again, comes from the channel itself, but basically that's just saying that every hour it will reset to democracy mode, because that kind of makes the gameplay a little easier. But if enough people are voting for anarchy, or I don't know exactly how that works, then it can actually switch back to anarchy. So that's basically the kind of simplistic definition of what Twitch Plays Pokemon is.
It sounds like this is very, I mean, like you said, it's chaotic, but also it's, I mean, I've read about it, but I've not been able to see streaming or video of this, you know, this project kind of going through. But it makes me want to think probably what their choices are when it comes to what Pokemon to choose. And I know a bunch of memes have been just spread throughout this, like, you know, this campaign. And they've already, which game are they up to right now?
Well, currently, as of, you know, right now as we're recording, they're not actually playing a Pokemon game. I think it's like 3 days before they start Pokemon Emerald, so they're already up to the third generation. By the time the podcast is published, though, so any listeners who are listening to this, they probably have already begun Pokemon Emerald by now.
These people, wow, this is just, I mean, it makes one think that what other, Nintendo titles are they going to actually do something of this? I mean, I could imagine probably them going through, say, even though the game has not, not that game, trying to go through, like, some, I don't know, take, for instance, Super Mario 64, or, well, actually, no, I think the reason why for this one works, though, is that when you have an RPG where you it's just very turn-based, you're able to give more people chances to actually choose options and stuff like that. I feel like if you're... I'm assuming when somebody's controlling somebody in the overworld, whatever, it's one person, or is it just more people kind of come into control?
Oh, everyone's controlling it at every minute of every day. So it's pretty crazy. In fact, there, I guess, I haven't actually, you know, participated in this, like I have said, but I have seen some footage of it, and there's a particular route where if you jump off a particular cliff, then you have to go, you have to kind of backtrack to get to the beginning of that route again, and then you have to start over. So I kind of just heard and saw a little bit of footage of how difficult getting through that particular route was. And, you know, if you're following Twitch Plays Pokemon, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. But yeah, I mean, it took, I think, 2 weeks or something like that. And this is, you know, with a 24/7 feed going, it took like, you know, 2 weeks worth of time to finish Pokemon Red.
And, you know, I the more I talk about this, the more I really need to delve into it and just to see what the fuss is all about. It sounds like this has been successful as it is in pretty much a fun and chaotic time for a lot of people who are involved with it.
Yep. I don't know if I could get into it. I'll have to see when they start Pokemon Emerald, but, you know, some people are quite addicted to it, so it's kind of an interesting phenomenon.
Well, I mean, everybody who's on here, whatever, I mean, if you can contribute to this, whatever, just send us a message about this and tell us your experience about it, whatever. I mean, we'd love to hear more and more about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that might just do it for the Nintendo news for this evening. We did not have that many for this week. I know we've, well, skimmed over a lot right now, but, you know, we're working for time here. But this will bring us to our main feature of today's episode, which is this week on March 19th is Super Metroid's 20th anniversary since its release. Which, for at the time when it was released on March 19th, it was Japan, and in the States, it was March 18th, 1994, and in Europe, July 28th, 1994. So, it has been 20 years since Super Metroid has been released. First thing that kind of came to my mind, though, was like, it's been 20 years? 20 years since this thing? I mean, I felt old last year for even one of my other favorite forms of media was when Jurassic Park was released in 3D. Like, last year, all bits of nostalgia kind of came back to me, just thinking, like, wow, this has been 20 years, and at that point I thought to myself, okay, I'm getting really old. For those who listen to me on here know that the super that I hold the Metroid series near and dear to my heart, and this one in particular is kind of interchangeable between that and Metroid Prime is one of my favorite games of all time. What are your some of your memories of, like, you know, Super Metroid, Holly? I mean, when was the first time you played it, and did you feel the hype, though, even years after, for how much it's done for being a footnote in gaming history for not only just for the franchise, but, you know, action platformers in general?
Well, my experience with Super Metroid is admittedly pretty small. As far as memories go, I honestly don't have that many. I had never even played a Metroid game in my life until 2011, when I started my personal blog, and I decided to try the original Metroid, so I played the original quite a bit. I never really got anywhere, which is funny. I never really got to any boss fights or anything.
It's a game that is, for as innovative for its time, it's one of those few main Nintendo property games that I felt like has not aged well. I mean, I remember as a kid, I had graphing paper just to map out, like, to put out the map, because I did not have the Nintendo Power issue where it had the maps on there. And then, of course, it was... At that time, it had a password system for you to save your progress. So I'd be in my living room just looking through pieces of paper of, like, these multiple-digit codes, whatever, on there, just looking, just like, is it this? Is it this? Is it this? And, you know, I would have to input them so many times just to get it right. But 2011 was your first experience with that?
Yes, it was. It's kind of sad. You know, I grew up on, like, Mario and Zelda and a couple of other franchises, but Metroid, it just... I mean, my family, I have a lot of older siblings. Metroid just never really made it into the family gaming library. I don't know how that happened, but it just didn't. Kind of sad.
It's... But you... After you played Metroid, I guess you just went in chronological order. You just went to, I guess then after Metroid, you went to the Prime titles, or you went to Metroid 2 just straight through the main series.
Well, after Metroid, I would have gone to Metroid 2, which was a Game Boy title, but I didn't have any access to it at the time. And so actually after playing the first Metroid, I moved on to Super Metroid. I didn't play it very much at all, regrettably. I should get on that sometime and actually play that game extensively. However, the atmosphere, the music, the graphics, the sound effects, just the whole, atmosphere of the whole thing really left a lasting impression on me. And so, as far as, memories of Super Metroid go, that's about all I can say. I really just need to dedicate some time to playing that game a lot more.
You are right about as far as how it that things like that have left a lasting impression for anybody who's played it, and I do thank Super Metroid for probably liking me, like making influencing me for liking the many other things that go into a game, be it sound effects, music, atmosphere, visuals, even gameplay. That alone whatever made me kind of want to look up the people behind the game, and I think that was what kind of jump-started me as a little kid, which made me realize who created Mario or Zelda, whatever it be, like find out who Shigeru Miyamoto was or Hiroshi Yamauchi and Satoru Iwata, all these people, the big wigs. It kind of just made me dig a little bit deeper into the gaming world, and Super Metroid was that start for me. I mean, when I first played it, though, when I died the first time, I didn't know Samus was a woman at all. I did not get that surprise ending. Again, Super Metroid was my first Metroid title. Coming in, I did not know Samus was a female protagonist until I died. I realized, I'm like, wait, she's a woman right now? I mean, I did not get that reveal as far as when I played through Metroid. And, when I went back and played after Super Metroid, I went and played, Metroid and then Metroid 2. Obviously, of course, neither of which were as grand, probably, as to what I played on the Super Nintendo. But it's also not only that, when I played through it, I kind of delved into speed running a lot. I mean, the fastest time I know I've ever beaten Super Metroid was 3 hours and 15 minutes. That's the long. That's the long. That's my best time I ever had that. And this game has been known probably for being a major jumpstart to the whole speedrunning community, for people who want to finish games at like the fastest completion time. And in addition to that, this also spawned a subgenre, which we see with the Castlevania games, which aptly titled Metroidvania, which we saw with Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which by its map and its backtracking is heavily influenced by Super Metroid. And even to this day, though, it's one of those games that you can still pick up and play. And like I said, unlike the original Metroid, this is a game that still has aged pretty well. And I was very happy once the Wii U Virtual Console was released, that was one of the first titles to be put out on there. And which kind of, I mean, even after playing, I couldn't tell you how many countless times I played Super Metroid, but it does, I mean. After even playing that, I said to myself, man, I can't wait to play a sequel to this or next. And, then came the 64 era. Nothing. And, of course, I had to wait till the GameCube for Metroid Prime, which was able to, feed my Metroid hunger as far as when it came to it. And, to this day, we've gone almost about 4 years since another Metroid title. And I know we talked extensively about this about with Retro, like, what would Retro do on the last episode. A lot of us threw out, original IP or another Nintendo franchise, or just back to Metroid. But do you think we could probably see another 2D Metroid this year, be it on the 3DS or maybe just an eShop title?
Actually, it does sound kind of likely for a 3DS title. I just have to ask, would, okay, so Metroid Other M, that kind of, I mean, when you say a 2D Metroid title, are you talking like, real 2D, or are you talking about kind
I'm
of.
talking 2D easily. I mean, something in the same vein that we've seen with, like, just a 2D platformer, like we see with Yoshi's New Island. Yeah, just like that.
Yeah. And kind of like the Game Boy Advance entries.
Exactly, which, by the way, Fusion does come out as one of the first Wii U Game Boy Advance Virtual Console titles come out in April. So that will be one that I'll be picking up since I haven't played it in quite some time.
Huh. Well, I own it along with a Game Boy Micro and a Game Boy Advance SP, so I probably won't be picking that up.
I never owned a Game Boy Micro. I never did. I know it was kind of a flop commercially, but it's just a... Oh, no, that's one of those things I feel like I would have lost quickly, like, real easily.
I only bought one because I've had my SP for so many years that, you know, the battery life's pretty horrible and so on and so forth, so I just kind of wanted something to play my Game Boy Advance games on. But, yeah, going back to Super Metroid, I was looking up a little bit of information on it online, you know, just stats and stuff, and it is one of the most well-reviewed games of all time. In fact, some people consider it to be the best Super Nintendo game, and that is also, you know, considering Zelda: A Link to the Past and a couple... What other... Oh, Chrono Trigger. That is often considered really great.
Final Fantasy 3/6.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really saying something. The Super Nintendo has a fantastic library. So to say a game is, you know, one of the best from the Super Nintendo library is really saying something. So, gosh, like I've said before, I really need to get playing that game.
No, it is amazing how many times this is, like, in top 10 or top 5 lists on there. And, you know, again, the reasoning to be it is the fact that it's just what it comes in its package. You know, like I said, music, gameplay, and atmosphere. These things that it's, again, like you said, it's regarded not only for its influence, but for what it comes, like I said, in the overall package. I will go by saying, like, if you want to make an action platformer, this is the textbook reason how to go from it. And, you know, there's probably nothing more that I wish I could probably fix with that game. Although, if I wanted to be greedy, I'd be like, add an extra area, but, you know, that's just out of the possibility. And, you know, I mean, I remember when I had a Game Boy Advance, the more rumored version was to have a Game Boy Advance version, but that was kind of quickly shelved in favor of Metroid Zero Mission, which I believe, in hindsight, was a better decision, because I felt like the music of it, like Kenji Yamamoto's score to Super Metroid, probably would have suffered on the Game Boy Advance hardware. And now, but, you know, it's just a... But going back to the topic at hand, though, as far as if we're seeing another 2D Metroid, yeah, it's likely. It just, we've seen hints of it, whatever, I mean, be it Reggie at the Spike Video Game Awards wearing a Metroid pin, but all signs were not sure even if Retro is going to be working on this. I mean, like I said, Retro, I feel like, is going to be doing something more original. I feel like that's probably the best way to get the Metroid series back, you know, back on its own feet. Not to say that it's stumbled or anything, but this would be something that really kind of gets it started again, because I think go back to its roots, get it on there, because Metroid to itself, we all know, is known... It's not a well-selling series in Japan. It is not. It's more... It seemed a success here in the Americas and, of course, in Europe. What can we see, probably, from a 2D Metroid? Probably more of the same, but also, maybe we could see another love letter to Super Metroid, like we'd seen with how A Link Between Worlds was a love letter and slash spiritual successor to A Link to the Past. But also, some would say Metroid Fusion, even though in chronological order, is the sequel to Super Metroid. It's Metroid 4 in the chronology. It's in the beginning of the game, if you can see. But I mean, I'm talking to as far as something that's... Most Metroid games today have not... As far as 2D, it's... You always have that option there where it just tells you where you want to go. You don't have that sense of exploration anymore. I mean, we shall see. We shall see probably when it comes to it, but, you know, I have to say, as far as Super Metroid, I mean, here's to 20 years of being and still holding is probably one of my favorite games of all time. I mean, who knows, I may just pick you up again right now and play again. I mean, my Twitter profile is Samus's like helmet view during the prologue scene of Super Metroid, and I could go on for hours and hours probably about how much I love this game, and just even for its simple story, and even the game has probably still probably one of the saddest but also greatest sacrifices in video game history. And of course, we all know what that is, but I'm sure you know what that is, Polly, since you said you haven't finished it.
I feel like I kind of have a sense of it. Like, there's a... Well, I don't want to spoil anything, so we'll have to talk about that.
It's been 20 years. I think people have gotten enough time to know what it is.
Well, then here's my kind of guess. isn't it like a baby Metroid sacrifices itself for Samus?
Yes, it is. A full-grown Metroid, like the larva that you're hunting, sacrifices itself during the final battle with Mother Brain. And when I first saw that scene as a kid, luckily my parents weren't in there, like, the room when I was, like, just shouting expletives, like, left and right just as soon as it was dead. And, I kind of teared up at that. I still, and even today's cinematic games, we see it be, you know, well, the last video game that made me cry was the beginning of The Last of Us, and, of course, the end as well. And I will go on saying that end, that sacrifice there still gets to me. It still does, and I feel like, you know, it even today's big-budget storytelling games, they have those moments, but I feel like it just doesn't come as close as I have on there, even though you don't need words or dialogue for it or flashy visuals, just sprites and just a few sound effects, and it just scene. It's quite poignant.
And that is some real praise, I think, for a, you know, 16-bit game.
Such a, I mean, God bless that game. That's all I can say. But as we even know, yeah, if you're one of the three people who have not even picked up Super Metroid, it is available in the Wii U eShop, so do yourself a favor and honor one of the greatest games of all time. Well, not only one of the greatest Super Nintendo games, but also one of the greatest video game landmarks of all time. So, and with that, I think that's going to do it for today's show. We have a bit of a short one here. I mean, obviously, without Lewis right now, we weren't going over our hour mark. But, you know, again, he's enjoying his honeymoon right now, and we hope he's having a really good time right now. But before we go, and of course, if you have any questions, you can send your questions to contact@infendo.com. Of course, you know, we post this each week, and you can also reach us through our Twitter handles, which we'll give out right now. Mine, for instance, is H. Milfeld, H-M-I-L-F-E-L-D, and yours, Holly?
Mine is Holly Felmeth, H-O-L-L-Y, and then F-E-L-L-M-E-T-H.
Able to answer your questions there or through email. Just spam us forward with questions right now. We love to answer all your questions and all. And, you know, with that, that concludes Infendo Radio episode 304, which I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast. Sorry about that, Ed Lewis, in advance. And we will see you again soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye, guys. Bye.